Welcome to the Blood Cancer Experience, a podcast by the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. This podcast connects people affected by a blood cancer to resources that inform, support, educate, and empower. When it comes to cancer, it's hard to navigate the unknown, and there are no easy answers. We're here to bring you the information you need to help make sense of every step of the blood cancer experience. My name is Montana Skirka, and I will be your guest host for today's episode. I work in the community as a yoga and meditation teacher and integrative wellness educator with a focus on providing patients with a holistic approach to mental health and well-being. As a childhood blood cancer survivor, I am dedicated to helping others navigate their journey to health and wellness through coaching, mindful movement, and group facilitation. Today on the show, I am talking to Charlotte Hall Coates and Natasha Sani, who serve as community service leads for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada. If you or a loved one has blood cancer, they help provide you with one-on-one personalized support. In total, there are 8 community service leads located across the country, and I'm so excited to have 2 of them with us today. Welcome, Natasha and Charlotte.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Thanks for being here. So I would love to hear a little bit more about the community service leads. Like, what is that position? And yeah, just tell us more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is Charlotte Hall Coates, and I'm the community services lead for the Atlantic region. So I have the privilege of working with folks here in Atlantic Canada. We help those who are either newly diagnosed or experiencing a blood cancer diagnosis, treatment, those who are, you know, finishing treatment and entering survivorship, as well as their loved ones, caregivers, and healthcare providers just find access to the resources and supports that they need wherever they are in their cancer experience.
Yeah, just to add to that, each of us were in different provinces, so we're experts on that healthcare region, which makes the service so much more personalized for each individual because we have those connections within the community with healthcare professionals, so we're able to bridge those resources and support to the patients.
That's really interesting. I would love to hear what region you're in, Natasha, and also how long each of you have been in this position.
Yeah, I cover the BC Yukon region, and I've been with the organization for just over a year.
And I've been with the organization about 4.5 years.
Nice. Wow. So different regions and different amounts of times you've been serving. And I think that that's a really interesting thing to note that, of course, we have different healthcare situations per province. So you have to really kind of get immersed in each location. And I'm sure you've noticed a lot of differences, but that's really cool that you're able then to provide that like very personal support based on the region that you're in. I mean, I'm interested to hear just generally being there over a year, over 4 years, like what are some of the main things that you notice folks are coming in with? What are the challenges that they're facing?
I think a big one is for those who are newly diagnosed, you know, I think there's a lot of misconceptions when it comes to blood cancers. You don't hear a lot about blood cancers, except that usually, you know, older folks get diagnosed or really young children. And so I think it's a lot of times a diagnosis of a blood cancer comes as a big surprise. And just the amount of different types of blood cancers that they are, a lot of them people don't really know what they are or have never heard of them. And so I think just the initial shock of what the diagnosis is. So I know a lot of people come to us early on in their cancer diagnosis, just looking for information, you know, what is this, you know, maybe what caused it and what treatments may look like. You know, hopefully they're having those conversations with their hematology team. But I know that a lot of people are looking for, you know, additional information, as well as other things when it comes to a blood cancer diagnosis, such as fatigue, you know, chemo brain, those sort of symptoms and side effects that a lot of people experience. We get a lot of questions around, you know, how to best manage those as well.
Yeah, and just for me, I find very similar to Charlotte. I mean, just yesterday I had a phone call with a couple who had just been diagnosed, and they were looking kind of to understand the medical jargon that the hematologist was throwing at them. So they had just written down all these words, and I was just helping them kind of understand the diagnosis, what the treatment protocol is, what, you know, the acronyms stand for. And then you just felt that like sigh of relief. Okay, I get it. I understand. Send me the links. Let me take the time to digest that later as well. So a lot of it is just helping them understand information spewed at them in 15-minute appointment.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's important to note that we are not medical professionals, but given, I think, the Canadian healthcare climate, people don't usually get a ton of time, you know, at least face-to-face with their healthcare professionals. So we can definitely step in and help, you know, point them in the right direction in terms of finding, you know, the information that they need, helping find answers to their questions or additional resources or services, whether, you know, locally or through our organization, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You're bringing up so many important points, and it's really, really helpful to understand kind of how, right from the beginning of diagnosis, that you are there, because so many people, I mean, you hear, you were diagnosed with a blood cancer, you're diagnosed with cancer, and, you know, it's a shock, I'm sure, for most people. You know, people are not expecting that. Like you said, they might not know all the ins and outs of what that even entails. There's a lot of information out there, but not necessarily all of it is correct or true. And a lot of it is based on stereotypes. So I think that when, you know, as you're processing the shock, your hematologist is sort of saying this information to you, and how much are you actually able to retain because you're in shock? Because it's so terrifying, because you don't have the information about it. And then I always reflect on the fact that, like, for these doctors, this is part of their job. So sometimes they can forget how scary it is or how confusing it is or, you know, the circumstances that these folks are under or what their understanding is. So I think that it's a really important point that sometimes our medical system, you know, isn't always the best at that communication piece and that kind of patience required to kind of sit with someone and ensure that they understand. So I think this is a really, really important service at the beginning of diagnosis to just give people, and I mean, like you said, you're not a medical professional, but sometimes that's almost, then you're able to relate on that personal level, right? Because you also didn't learn that medical jargon in medical school. So it's just a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. One thing that we hear quite frequently is the amount of information that they receive at diagnosis can sometimes become really overwhelming. And so we just, you know, help them sort of digest it, go through it, figure out the things that are most relevant to them, and then help them, you know, navigate other resources that they may be looking for at that time. And everybody's so different, and there's so many different types of blood cancers. Some of them are, you know, very aggressive, very acute. They have to start treatment right away, where others are, you know, more indolent, slow growing, more chronic. They might not require treatment right away. And so everybody's cancer experience is so different. And that's why that personalized sort of one-on-one support is so needed, because everybody goes through their own cancer experience, you know, in such a unique way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to add to that as well, I mean, we're so fortunate with the LLSC and with our counterpart in the States that we have resources at our fingertips. So the organization here in Canada has worked really hard to break down the overwhelming amount, like Charlotte mentioned, information people receive into bite-sized doses, into fact sheets and guides for each disease, and just helping people understand in small parts and meeting them where they are. When do they need that information on their blood cancer experience, and giving it to them when they need it most, as opposed to all in the beginning, right? It's very overwhelming.
Right. So these fact sheets are able to allow someone in their own time to kind of reflect on the information when they're actually ready to comprehend it. And it also sounds like there's a piece of this where it just feels like there's someone in it with you. Right? Like, of course, you want your doctors to be there with you in your circle of care, but it's also almost feels like a peer, like a, you know, a community. It's really essentially saying you're part of our community and we're going to help you. I think that personal piece also is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that we've really tried to invest more of at the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada is our peer support programs and what we're able to offer in terms of bringing communities together. I think peer support is so important, you know, regardless of your support networks. You know, you may have the most supportive family, you know, great healthcare professional teams, but there's nothing that replaces, you know, connecting with others who've gone through that same experience. And so through our programs, like our First Connection Peer Support Program and our virtual support groups, we've really, you know, taken on that role of connecting communities together and offering them those opportunities to actually connect with others that have gone through, you know, a similar experience and can really speak to the nuances that someone who is diagnosed with a blood cancer experience.
Yeah, I mean, as we know, like any kind of mental health support helps build hope, strength, resilience, and has positive outcomes for disease. And when we're looking at our peer support, for example, I had one member of our virtual support group say, you know, it can be overwhelming having to explain things to family and friends over and over again, but it's so nice to connect with a peer or my support group when I don't have to explain myself. They understand me physically, mentally, and spiritually. And it's just a safe space. I can come in and get what I need to and not have to explain myself and what I'm going through and the why behind it. They just get it.
That's really powerful. And I think also in terms of the community service supports that you're providing, it allows people to feel like they don't have to rush. I think that's part of the strain in our medical system, that because things are so quick, and so you're diagnosed with cancer and then you have all this information thrown at you and it's really overwhelming and scary and shocking, and then it's kind of all over. And it sounds like you're able to really take time with newly diagnosed patients. So what's an example of kind of, so you mentioned a few, when someone is newly diagnosed with cancer and they come to you, kind of how do you support them? And do you have any examples of people that really stick out in your mind and how you supported them at that time of diagnosis?
Yeah, I have, I guess I have one family that I can think of. They're in a more rural part of the province, and husband was diagnosed, basically went in for something completely unrelated, diagnosed the next day, you need to go down to Vancouver to begin treatment. And of course, you know, imagine you have two little kids, you have a house there, you now need to find new housing, you need to figure out school, caregiver, like all of these pieces. And it's urgent. So, you know, helping them through, okay, Canadian Cancer Lodges, is there housing available? How long am I going to have to stay in Vancouver for treatment? Working through that, getting them access to the social worker teams here are, I just want to shout out to like all of them. They're awesome here in BC. They're so supportive to patients. So just telling them to advocate, you know, find yourself a social worker. They're going to help you get resources for finance, living, all of those pieces. And then, you know, when you're in a better place and they're looking for further support, you know, here's our peer support. Now you've gone through this treatment and you're trying to understand the effects and manage a lot of the side effects. Okay, well, here's your First Connection program, someone who's been through it and can help talk to you about it. Here's our support group for ongoing. Like, there's just so many facets of our support that can be plopped in everywhere along their experience. And I like to say, you know, we're always here to help. It's all over our website. We're here to help whenever you need it. So if you need us in the beginning and then you go through and then later, you know what, I need that peer support that we talked about, we're here. Just reach out and we'll connect you. Yeah, it definitely is a full start to finish kind of service and beyond.
Yeah, and I think a big thing is both helping them navigate sort of the resources that we have internally through the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Canada, but then also helping them, you know, with external resources within their communities. As Natasha said, you know, we try to work closely with the social work teams at all of our respective hospitals and making sure that, you know, people know who to turn to when they do have questions, whether it's financial questions or questions about accommodations or, you know, even access to drugs, you know, just making sure that they have all that information, because as you said, there's so much going on, and we don't really have a terribly holistic healthcare system. So people do have to, you know, do a little bit of their own digging and try to find their own resources and support. So we're really there to help them along and help, you know, help them navigate those different systems.
Absolutely. It's something that I don't think people think about, that, you know, Natasha, your story really highlighted that it's not just about the shock of the cancer. It affects your financial situation, your children, your family, your loved, like there's so many layers to things that are affected, mm-hmm. and how difficult it is to kind of maintain all that stuff in the best of our time, let alone mm-hmm. when we're hit with this. Again, in this example, it came out of nowhere, which it often does. Situation that just completely shakes up your entire life. So it's so beautiful that there is the support available to help with all the different things that don't even seem at first connected to cancer, but that of course are affected by cancer, and that you are there to kind of help navigate through our very complicated, difficult at times system to help them find exactly what they're looking for, because oftentimes mm-hmm. resources are there somewhere, but it's very, very hard to know where to even go.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And so they might not know that, oh, there are social workers available if, you know, they're feeling the financial strain of their cancer diagnosis. They may not know that there are, you know, dietitians or nutritionists available through their healthcare center. Again, you know, we don't want people to have to, you know, We don't want people to have to do too much digging on their own. We really, you know, if we're able to help them find the resources that they need, that's really important for the work that we do.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think sometimes, like, for example, in that scenario, they weren't necessarily looking for support on the diagnosis in the beginning. It was more like, okay, where do I go? Where do I stay? What am I expect when I get to Vancouver? And sometimes I feel like just putting people at ease on all those whirlwind pieces of finance, living, just calming all of that helps them then be able to focus on what's important, and it's getting through that treatment. And then once they're through, later on, they, you know, reconnect, okay, I need to know about side effects and what is this drug now that I've been put on, and then we can step in then when they're ready for that information. But sometimes in the beginning, they just need help to like calm all that exterior noise so that they can focus in the present at what's most important, and it's getting through that treatment.
And it's interesting too, because I found, you know, a couple times we always think of, you know, we need to be there when someone's newly diagnosed. That's usually where most of the attention is placed on an individual. But recently I found that, you know, once they go through treatment, they're finished their treatment, they've rung that bell, sort of the dust settles. And that's, you know, quite often when they turn to us too and say, you know, I'm supposed to be getting on with my life and back to my life. And it's, you know, it's so different and really needing help, you know, with that adjustment to that new normal. And so we've really tried to include a lot of new resources really focused on like survivorship, that after cancer phase, because we found too a lot of people, that's when, you know, they were in that fight or flight mode for so often that once their treatment's done, it's usually when things kind of come to the surface a little bit and they realize like, yeah, I probably could use some resources, or I could speak to someone who's gone through something similar. So just to reiterate, you know, for us, it's so important to have resources, you know, regardless of where they are on their cancer experience. You know, it doesn't have to be newly diagnosed individuals. It could be someone halfway through treatment, someone finishing treatment, or even someone who did treatment a couple of years ago, but are still experiencing, you know, some of the side effects based on what treatment they went through.
I think that's such an important point. I know for myself and my own journey, like I really struggled in survivorship, probably much more, I would say, than during the acute situation. I mean, I don't think I really understood what was going on when it was happening fully, and surviving it was the tough part for me for a very long time. And there wasn't resources like this available at that point, so it's really, you know, makes me feel better as a former patient and as someone who works with patients that we're understanding the challenges, unique challenges that come with survivorship as well, and kind of addressing them. And I think what you're speaking to generally, both of you, is that this is really personalized and that people are going to come to you at different points for different issues. There's no right or wrong way. And, you know, maybe sometimes people do want to know all the medical information at first, or maybe, like you said, other people, it's more help me figure out my finances, you know, and I'll worry about the side effects later. So, and I think that's another thing that's sometimes missing in our healthcare system is that kind of nuanced approach just because of capacity and time. They're not necessarily saying, oh, what would you like to know today, right? What's important for you? It's more just, this is the information that's important that we want to just get out. And it sounds like part of your support and part of this community service lead position that you do is that you're able to really understand what they need at the time that they need it and help them address that situation, depending on where they're at.
Yeah, I'd say absolutely. You know, you could have two people that are in very similar situations, maybe similar diagnosis or similar treatment, and the way that they experience their blood cancer could be totally different. You know, some people have their, you know, have their blinders on or just like, give me the information I need to get through the next day, the next week, the next month. Whereas other people are like, I just want all the information. Give me all the booklets, all the podcasts, all the fact sheets. And I just want to try to absorb everything. So yeah, we definitely try to, you know, meet people where they're at. If they are feeling very overwhelmed, you know, we try to give them little bite-sized pieces of information, as Natasha said, you know, maybe if one fact sheet, maybe one podcast to listen to. But if they, you know, want lots of information, you know, we can share lots of information. And we really let them decide, you know, what works best for them. Because a lot of people, you know, they've never experienced something like this before. So they might not know what they want. So it's really kind of exploring, you know, what makes the most sense for each person.
Yeah, definitely. I think just to add to Charlotte's point is, yeah, totally meeting them where they're at and acknowledging sometimes, like Charlotte mentioned, asking for help can be such a courageous thing as well for them to reach out to us. So just acknowledging, okay, you know, they've taken this step of reaching out to us, and sometimes just listening to them is sometimes all they need. And then later sending out those resources slowly and building that rapport so they feel like, you know, there's someone there to lean on.
And we hear that a lot too, you know, individuals feeling like they're, you know, burdening their loved ones by, you know, they feel like they're complaining too much or asking too many questions or, you know, just always making it sort of the focus, and they feel bad for feeling like, you know, they're, you know, being a burden to their loved ones. So, you know, we always say too, we're just extra pair of ears to listen to, you know, we're here whenever they need us in terms of like offering our support and really just, you know, hearing them out. Cause I think Natasha brought up a really interesting point in that people sometimes just want to be heard, and that's, you know, their biggest concern.
Right. So if someone's listening to this and they don't even know what they need right now, but they just, they can call you, you know, and I think like you're saying, even reaching out for help is really scary. So it's really nice to kind of humanize this position and hear from both of you and really understand that like you really are here for whatever people need, even if it is to listen to them, because that's another really important point, that this can affect our relationships with people, and it can make people with cancer feel guilty about feeling like they need more, they have to ask for help, they're not comfortable with that, maybe they've never had to do that before in this capacity. It can be really isolating. People in your life can act very differently around you. Sometimes they are supportive, sometimes they're not as supportive. There's a whole range of experiences. So just having, you know, that extra pair of supportive ears, I'm sure, is really helpful for people.
Yeah, you know, I had someone mention that she was a teacher before and had a community of support, you know, through the teaching staff, but of course, not being able to go back to work, and she felt so lonely. And just coming to me to get resources and chat, you know, I've been working with her for a while now, and then coming to our community support group, and learning tools on how to kind of break that isolation. Of course, you know, with COVID as well, it was amplified even more. But, you know, she started baking for her neighbors, like going on walks and connecting with peers in our support groups. And it's just been so awesome to watch her grow as well as an individual, navigating her diagnosis and like coming to find new activities that fill her cup and like make her feel well, actually, this is interesting. She said, make her feel like she's helping, that she's doing something, which I found interesting. Like, make her feel like she's doing something valuable for others by like baking, making soup. She loves making soup. So, yeah, I thought that was really, really great to hear.
I love that, because that reminds us that one of our needs is, you know, sometimes to serve. And sometimes when we feel, you know, that can be a really hard part of being hit with a diagnosis, where if your identity was, you know, intertwined, like many of us, with your career and with, you know, helping your kids or helping your friends or your family or your community, and then you're not able to anymore, right? That can be really, really difficult. And to get a sense of meaning through connection and also through service in little ways, you know, I think that's really insightful. You know, people don't necessarily think of that, but oftentimes being a part of community and serving in little ways can help us feel like a little more empowered, a little more in control, I think, of a very scary, out of control experience.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's what the value of our First Connection program is. You know, people who've gone through these experiences and are giving back something like invaluable by connecting with someone who's going through the experience and offering their time and kind of talking them through and answering their questions to give them a bit of that strength and hope that, you know, they can walk a similar path. Is really amazing. And our First Connection program is totally invaluable and something to definitely take advantage of if you haven't.
Yeah, huge, huge shout out to our volunteers, because they are definitely the heart and soul of that program, just giving back and connecting with others and sharing their expertise as, you know, blood cancer survivors.
And we've been talking about this community aspect and how it affects our relationships. And I would love to hear, because sometimes we don't talk about caregivers and what their needs are. So what services do you provide to caregivers, and how can they support themselves? What are they looking for?
Yeah, it's so important that we have, you know, dedicated resources for caregivers. I think sometimes caregivers, you know, they're so focused on their loved one, whether it's, you know, treatment or taking care of them at home, that, you know, they don't always have the time or sort of space to kind of reflect on their own experiences. So we felt it's really important that we have resources really dedicated to their unique needs. And so we have, you know, lots of information on our website. We have a portion of our website dedicated to caregiving, where we have all of our resources, such as, you know, fact sheets, podcast episodes, webcast episodes, lots of different multimedia tools. And then we have First Connection volunteers that themselves are caregivers. So if a caregiver wants to talk to another caregiver volunteer and learn about their experience, whether it was, you know, caring for, you know, a spouse or a child or even a parent diagnosed with a blood cancer, there we have that available for them. And then also our virtual support groups. We have lots of people who attend as caregivers, and so they can, you know, connect with the larger caregiver community as well. So we definitely try to make space and acknowledge that it's really important for caregivers to take the time and, you know, get the support that they need in order for them, you know, to be an effective caregiver for their loved ones. So always really important.
Yeah, and I think with caregivers as well, just, you know, acknowledging the strength it takes to support someone going through the experience and like all that treatment, and like Charlotte kind of mentioned, helping them take care of themselves so that they can be an effective support person. And I know Charlotte shared this with me earlier. We need to be taken care of and have that strength within ourselves so that we can support someone else. So just making sure whether we're that listening ear for a caregiver, whether utilizing one of our many programs, just making them feel supported and heard so that they can support their loved one.
Yeah, it's really important to note that, you know, we take calls from caregivers all the time, and sometimes they need, you know, just a set of ears to listen to them. They don't want to, you know, or at least they feel like they can't, you know, complain too much around the person, you know, that's going through the cancer experience, or they just may not have a lot of supports themselves as caregivers. And so, yeah, really important that, you know, caregivers reach out if they need help as well or are looking for resources for themselves.
Absolutely. It reminds me that, you know, like we were saying before about how cancer can affect all these different areas of our life, whether it be finances or relationships, it also affects all the people in our lives to one extent or another. And it can be traumatic and difficult and challenging for everyone affected in different ways. And it is so important for all of us to seek help if we need it and not to feel guilty. You know, the survivor shouldn't feel guilty, or the person who is facing these challenges and survive these challenges shouldn't feel guilt if you're looking for help, and neither should a caregiver. Like, I think it's everyone, you know, we always say, you know, you have to care for yourself first. But it is actually, it's not just this fluff. Like, it is actually true that if you are burned out, you are not providing the support that you would like to provide, you know? And nobody wants anyone to be sacrificed emotionally in this endeavor. It's really, really difficult. And it's all of our obligations to, like, care for ourselves so that we can show up in the best way possible. And yeah, honor our own struggles, whether we're a caregiver or someone going through it. Like, it's real and it affects everyone differently.
Absolutely. We, you know, sometimes give the analogy, right? It's sort of like when you're on an airplane and they say, you know, you have to put on your own oxygen mask before you can put on, you know, the other person's oxygen mask. And it's so true. As caregivers, you know, you really have to take the time to make sure that you're getting the support that you need in order to, you know, be able to take care of your loved one. Easier said than done, but that's why we're here to, you know, hopefully make it a little bit easier for all of our caregivers out there that also need a little bit of care.
Yeah, so we've talked a bit about diagnosis and how you kind of help navigate people when they're first diagnosed. We've talked about caregivers. I would love to hear a little bit more about, like, the treatment journey itself and what are some challenges that folks face when they're getting treatment. If you have any examples and what supports you have available at that point.
Yeah, so I think treatment, it's such a different experience for everyone. I always think of, you know, some people that are diagnosed with a chronic or a more indolent form of blood cancer, they might not even require treatment right away. There's a protocol called watch and wait, or active surveillance, where, you know, the cancer is there, but it may not be progressing at a fast enough rate to actually, you know, see any benefits from starting treatment. And so they'll hold off as long as that they can, obviously, with a hematologist monitoring pretty routine blood work. And so for a lot of people that, you know, receive that diagnosis, but then say, you know, we're going to do a delayed treatment, that is, you know, not an easy thing to hear. And I think a lot of people even struggle with that. For our folks that are in watch and wait, we make sure that we have a lot of resources. I know we have support groups that are more geared towards those living with chronic blood cancers so that they can connect with others that are in a similar situation. So there's really no, like, one size fits all approach to blood cancer. Some people, you know, may be on that protocol for a really long time before they need treatment. Some people have to start treatment, you know, after a little bit. Some people may need more aggressive treatment. So everybody's, you know, treatment journeys is so different. And that's why, you know, we really try to take that one-on-one approach, especially to, you know, care for people with, you know, whatever they're experiencing.
And just the treatment, like Charlotte mentioned the treatment protocols, even though when someone might have a similar diagnosis, each person's journey is so unique through that treatment. So it's hard to kind of do a one size fits all. And I think that's the beauty of the community service support, is it is so unique. And we're just meeting them where they are, whatever they need in that moment. You know, someone might have a similar treatment, but they're experiencing different side effects. So all of these things taken into account, and then kind of learning more from them so we can help them where they need it most.
Yeah, because, and it also really depends on where people live. I know here on the East Coast, representing Atlantic Canada, you know, sometimes people can get treatment close to home. Some people have to travel either to, you know, their large city centers, and then some people have to travel to other provinces to receive treatment, you know, depending on if they're getting something like CAR T-cell therapy or a stem cell transplant. So it really, yeah, you know, it really depends on you know, what their diagnosis and treatment's going to look like that. Or, sorry, it's really going to depend what their treatment or diagnosis looks like. But that's why it's really important for them to know that they can always reach out. We've done a couple, you know, cross-provincial support. I know that some of our Atlantic folks end up in Ontario or Quebec if they're getting, you know, transplants done, depending on what center they're sent to. And so, you know, the nice thing about the community services team is that, you know, we're constantly connecting with one another. We can work in collaboration just to make sure that everybody feels supported. We've even had situations where, you know, a person may live, you know, here in Nova Scotia, but their caregivers may be in other provinces. So we always try to work in collaboration with one another to make sure that, you know, the whole family feels supported.
Right. What are some of the common side effects that folks experience? I know that it is very different, but are there certain side effects that you see a lot? And, you know, how do you help support them? Maybe you have an example.
Yeah, I think the common ones that we tend to see are, you know, fatigue, brain fog, just feeling very, you know, cloudy in the head, especially, you know, if you are receiving, you know, treatments like chemotherapy or immunotherapy. I know there can be issues around like nutrition. Sometimes you see like GI issues. You know, we sometimes see weight gain or weight loss, again, depending on treatment. But those are sort of the more common ones. And then, you know, it does get pretty specific. Like if you're doing a stem cell transplant, that comes with its own set of, you know, side effects. And then even, you know, a donor transplant versus your own cell transplant comes with a difference. So very, very different, but we always recommend, you know, connecting with your healthcare team if you are having side effects, even if you think they're, you know, pretty mild. It's always good to make sure your healthcare team knows about them and to record them too if there's any changes. So those are usually our recommendations. And then we have lots of information on our website on how to manage, you know, the more common types so that, you know, people don't have to feel alone in their experience. I know some people are like, oh, I thought it was just me feeling tired all the time, or feeling like if I, you know, get off the couch and grab something from the fridge, I'm exhausted by the time I come back. And it's like, I think sometimes people don't realize that a lot of people share those similar experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then just looking to another resource that we have is our Health Manager app, which is a really great pocket tool, right, to track your side effects. And then you're not burdened with like, okay, when did I have that? Or what teach date was that? Or how frequency? What was the intensity? It's just open your phone, pop in what you're feeling, the frequency, how bad it is. And then, you know, next time you go see your healthcare team, it's an easy tool to just open and show them, look, this is what's been going on. This is how I'm feeling. And then nutrition as well. There's lots of resources in there for nutrition and diet. So I always like to use that as a handy, I call it the pop tool. So goes wherever you go.
Yeah, and we find a lot of caregivers like it too, especially if they're, you know, able to track it for their loved one. As Natasha said, they can record, you know, medications, set timers, reminders, track food and hydration. So important to, kind of get a handle on as someone goes through treatment.
And can you just say the name of the app again and where folks can find that?
Yeah, it's LLSC Health Manager app, and it's downloadable in both Android and Apple app stores.
Great. It's another tool to feel more empowered, it sounds like. I feel a lot of these symptoms, fatigue and brain fog, can be really isolating because, like you said, you might not even realize that's what it's coming from, and it can feel very debilitating. And so I think it's important to, again, have these resources so folks can understand why this is happening and have people to talk to and to help track it, that they feel a little more in control of what's going on.
And I know that comes up quite a bit during our support groups. A lot of people do share, their experiences with things like fatigue. And what I love about those sort of group settings is that, there's a lot of reassurance. We get, members that maybe are a little bit further on in their cancer diagnosis or treatment. And, they can say, yeah, I was totally there. And now I'm able to walk, double that I was during treatment, or I'm training for a marathon, or, just sort of nice to have those people that, can inspire you a little bit. Because, I think it can feel, as you said, very isolating. And I think people are, may lose hope a little bit, feeling like, if I'm always tired, I'm always going to feel tired. Mm-hmm. Whereas, things hopefully will get better. And it's nice to see that people, were able to improve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Montani brought up a really good point about being in control. So whatever we can do, sometimes your blood cancer experience is such a whirlwind and you have no control day to day of what's happening to your body, and being able to give individuals something that they're able to control and feel empowered with, I think is so important as well.
Right. So now that we've sort of talked about diagnosis and treatment and chronic cancer, which is its own unique experience, and we've talked about caregivers, we've covered so many different topics. I know we touched on this earlier, that of survivorship, but I wanted to kind of delve a little bit deeper into that. So what are you noticing for folks that have survived cancer? What are the challenges that are coming up? What are they coming to you with? And what are some supports you have available for them?
I think, it depends kind of where they're at in their life. I've had folks kind of reach out and trying to get back into the workforce. So kind of slowly doing that, I guess, the reentry into work and taking it slowly, because sometimes, they are still finding their fatigue after a long day. So learning how to take, one step at a time. I had one individual who, he was an avid biker, and it was so wonderful to hear that in his first year after his cancer, he ended up riding 5,000 kilometers just slowly every day, building it back up, and, just helping people go through and achieve those little goals and giving them the resources we have on how to manage some of those survivorship side effects as well.
Yeah, I think a big thing is people expect to be sort of their post-cancer selves. We hear that quite a bit. I went through treatment, so I should be able to do everything that I did before I was diagnosed. And unfortunately, that's not always the reality. Whether it's treatment or the cancer itself can take, have quite a big effect on someone's body. So it really is sort of building back up to hopefully where they were before. We see a lot of those challenges. But even just, feeling a little bit lost in life, I think after cancer treatment, I think people, when they're in treatment, it's just go, 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 that fight or flight survivor mode that someone's in. And then, once the dust settles, the treatment's done, people usually, take a little bit of stock in terms of where they're at. And I know quite a few people who, changed careers or, decided I'm not going to go back to my old job. It's too demanding, too fatigued. I get too tired. I feel too much fatigue afterwards. And then making, big life changes or people deciding, you know, I was studying this one thing in university, but maybe I want to switch careers. So I think a lot of people take a little, like, you know, reevaluation of where they're at, and it can, you know, kind of affect what they decide to do after their cancer, you know, treatment. But the one really great thing is, you know, due to so much advancement in terms of like treatment and medications, you know, we are seeing survival rates go up. People are living longer, you know, post-cancer treatment. And so that's why for us, it's so important to acknowledge that, you know, they do experience, you know, unique challenges even after, you know, they're done with treatment, they're in remission, their cancer is gone. And so we want to, you know, making sure that we continue to support them even, you know, years after their cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, this is such an important topic and something I'm so passionate about. I'm really like excited to be talking to you both about this, because for me, like, I think what I realized was that, you know, the challenges that I was facing post-surviving cancer were so isolating and so terrifying and so confusing. And then when I started to think about it, I thought, oh, there's not that many, like, survivorship, like you said, has been increasing because our medical advances have been increasing. So this is like an amazing thing, but it's also kind of an unknown territory because, you know, the cancer that I battled when I was seven, like, the rates of survival were not that high 20, 30 years ago. So it hasn't been that long that we've had all these incredible survivors. And now it's kind of trying to understand their journey. I think bringing up this existential kind of threat and, you know, once you're faced with mortality, once you go through a challenge like this, it is potentially going to change you. It's going to change your understanding of life and of relationships and of a lot of different things and meaning. And that's okay, right? But I think sometimes we can get stuck if we're hoping to kind of just plop ourselves back to where we were before. And sometimes that piece of like acceptance is really hard and really important so that we can move on and our future may look really different than how we expected it to look, but that's actually okay. But we have to accept it first. Because if we only see, oh, I can't do this when I used to be able to, I can't do, then we're just pushing against something that is not going to necessarily change. And that's exhausting and devastating and produces a lot of suffering. So that's why, you know, I'm so passionate about these like mindfulness-based modalities as well, because when we come to accept where we're at, then we can say, okay, maybe there are like beautiful opportunities here, you know? Maybe I didn't feel super fulfilled in my job or in my life before. And maybe now I can really understand where I'm at and kind of move forward in a different way.
And I think that's why it's so important for us to have resources, especially geared towards you, younger people who are experiencing a cancer diagnosis, like children or those who are in the adolescent young adult age group. Because so much is going on during those years, right? It's usually when you're in university or finishing up university, or, you know, if you're younger, you're still in school, you're, you know, developing relationships, you're hopefully falling in love, getting married, having children, those types of things, if that's what you choose to do. You know, so much change. And so I think especially for those age groups, the post-cancer experience can be really challenging because, you know, they may not feel like they can relate to their peers. Maybe they're having issues around fertility based on their treatment and diagnosis. So that can be a really big challenge for them that, you know, maybe their friends aren't experiencing, as you said, you know, a bit of a crisis in careers, you know, deciding if that is the right job after a cancer diagnosis. So we should mention that we are also looking at, you know, developing more tools, more resources for young people, because sometimes they get overlooked when it comes to, you know, the whole cancer experience, or at least information for on the cancer experience. So really important that we have resources really, really geared towards younger people diagnosed.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many ways that this can affect someone, and it can feel really overwhelming once you start to really understand all of it, but it's also so empowering and so exciting that this resource is available for folks. And as we said at the beginning, it can be really, really hard to reach out. So what would you say to someone who's listening right now and, you know, maybe still hesitating a bit to call you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, head to our website, read through, see what, you know, you're looking for. If you're not ready to kind of filter through all that information, but you don't want to chat, you know, you can always email us as a first touch point. We have email, phone, you know, whatever suits you, but definitely pick up that phone or reach out by email and make a first contact. As we discussed, you know, there's so many things, whether it's just listening or getting a little bit of information or kind of understanding some of the language used through the experience, you know, we're here to help.
Yeah, I think the website's a great place to start. We recently updated our website, so it's we're hoping it's nice and user friendly, beautiful layout. But yeah, even, you know, going through a website can feel overwhelming. Some people, even, you know, that step can be you know, a bit of a challenge. So as Natasha said, reach out to us. You can email us, give us a phone call, whatever works best from you. And then we can help you find what you're looking for. If it is something like peer support, if it's something like the Health Manager app, or even just fact sheets, webcasts, podcasts. We try to provide information in different formats. So if you find reading really overwhelming, but you'd rather watch something, we have lots of great educational videos. If you'd rather, you know, do what you're doing now and listen to a podcast, we have lots available as well.
Absolutely. And what is the website? And what is the phone number? What is the email address folks can reach out to you at?
Yeah, our website is bloodcancers.ca. And then depending where you're at, you can go to our Connect With Us page to contact via email, but our toll-free number is 1-833-222-4884.
Great. And like Charlotte and Tasha are saying, even if you don't know what you want to ask yet, but you're just feeling overwhelmed and just kind of want to vent or have someone listen, that's also what they're there for. So thank you so much, Charlotte and Natasha, for taking the time to talk to us today. If listeners have any questions about this podcast or need any support or resources to navigate your experience, I highly encourage you to connect with the community services lead in your region. For more information, visit bloodcancers.ca. If you liked our podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. You can find us wherever you access your favorite podcast. We also welcome any ideas for our program. So we would love to hear from you. Send us an email with your suggestions or comments at info@bloodcancers.ca. Until next time, stay well and stay connected.